6 o'clock at Busboys and Poets in Washington, D.C. And next Friday, February 7th at noon, Nermeen Sheikh will be moderating a panel with the Squad at Howard University. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Ayanna Pressley. The four Congress members will be with Nermeen at Howard University at noon, February 7th. You can go to all details at democracynow.org. Also, Democracy Now! Will be broadcasting the Senate impeachment trial at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is now 8 a.m. Up next on Thursday Morning Talk Radio, Linda Olson-Osterlund takes your calls about Trump's impeachment and discusses Ralph Nader's 13 articles of impeachment. But first, this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. There is a collection box in the lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between Burnside and Ankeny. Donations are accepted Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund with Thursday Morning Talk Radio for KBOO. This morning, I've got a show planned around the impeachment. I don't know how you feel about that. You know, a lot of people are very sick of hearing anything about the impeachment. Other people can't take their eyes away from it. I'm one of those that's somewhere in between. I've spent a fair amount of time watching it on NPR on the TV screen and reading about it and listening to summaries about it. And it's funny because I'm radical enough to not believe that the impeachment process will result in his removal and to be distrusting of the whole process. And yet I'm sucked into it absolutely in terms of hearing what people say. Of course, there's a lot of repetition, but there's also interesting parts that come out and things that show attitudes. The impeachment is in several days in, and it has finished the presentation of the case by the House managers to the Senate, and it's finished the Senate's answer to that. And now each, at least as of yesterday, they were going through questions to different parties, and so one side would get to ask a question of either side, and then the other would answer, and back and forth it went. And so that was fairly interesting too. I found the Republicans more interesting in how they tried to pretend the Constitution was something very different than what it was, and how they pretended to twist the facts. So I'm very interested in hearing what you, the audience out there, have to say about that. I do have some clips from Ralph Nader that we took from Democracy Now! When he was on it. I want those clips on. I appreciate Ralph Nader in particular on the impeachment and sometimes on other things because he's very straightforward. He doesn't try to pretend that he believes the Democrats want the good. He doesn't try to pull punches about what he sees. He says it pretty directly and pretty strongly. So I think we're set up for the first clip. These clips begin a little rough. You won't know where you're starting, but it's Ralph Nader talking about impeachment from Democracy Now!
Far too narrow and perilous. If Nancy Pelosi wants to remove Donald Trump, she went on a very narrow base. She is clearly not supportive of impeachment generally. She took it off the table when it was proposed to her in 2007, impeachment of the war criminals, George Bush and Dick Cheney. And she's come forward with a very narrow hand for the most impeachable president of all time. To go forward on the Ukraine, important as that is, because it affects interference in the upcoming election by Trump, soliciting foreign aid, into interference, not just the Ukraine effort. He's actually said China, Russia, help him. But just think of all the other impeachable offenses, some of them per se, that are kitchen table offenses. He's destroyed, shredded, disabled the life-saving injury prevention and disease reduction programs of the federal government, Environmental Protection Agency, OSHA, protecting worker safety, Product Safety Commission. He's basically closed down the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, protection from Wall Street and other financial crimes against ordinary people, consumers, investors, small savers. That is a critical impeachable offense, according to the framers of our Constitution. The defiant refusal to faithfully execute the laws. She didn't go with that. The enrichment of his family with foreign governments using his hotels. The so-called emoluments clause. Slam dunk, per se. She didn't go with that. The seizure of the power of the purse. The appropriations power of the Congress, exclusively reserved to the Congress by the Constitution. She didn't go with that. He took $3.7 billion from the Defense Department to build the wall. That's a clear impeachable offense. It even gets worse, Amy. A month ago or so, Speaker Pelosi came to a press conference and said decisively that he committed bribery, said well documented, and she dropped the bribery impeachable clause. The whole obstruction of Congress is restricted largely to the Ukraine investigation, when he has the broadest contempt of Congress of any president, including, by the way, armed force in 9 countries overseas without any congressional declaration of war. And there is more as well. So the question is, why are the Democrats didn't take a stronger stand and go with a strong hand that would have sharply increased public opinion because of the kitchen table issues, the health and safety and economic situations that he has fostered. Just look, average life expectancy is down. Productivity of labor is down. Manufacturing employment is down under Trump. These are not impeachable offenses, but the point is that he's vulnerable on these points, and he's a lying machine. I always thought that Alexander Hamilton's definition, one of his definitions of high crimes and misdemeanors, was the abuse of the public trust. Consider this. He is a sexual predator. Where is Congress on that? They got rid of Franken and John Conyers for 1% of what Trump has done. He's embroiled in all kinds of lawsuits by women who have sworn under oath that he's assaulted them, harassed them, etc. Then you have the bigotry and the racism, which he follows up with. I mean, his policies come down very hard on minority and the poor. And then you have his incitement to violence. If he's impeached, civil war, there'll be riots in the street. And then you cluster those under serial lying. He lies by the hour. Lies by the day. He's averaging 22 lies, over 14,000 since he came into office. And you have an abuse of the public trust. People understand that. They don't want to have neighbors. They don't want to raise their children with this kind of model in the White House. Lying, misogyny, racism, incitement to violence. So she has forfeited a huge opportunity, not just to impeach Trump, but to remove him. What's the point of just impeaching him if you don't use the full arsenal of impeachable offenses? And what a lot of people don't know, I've been down on Capitol Hill, and most of the Democratic members of the House Judiciary Committee opposed her narrow approach, but they were overruled. They were even backed by the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Mr. Engel, by the chair of the Financial Committee, Congresswoman Maxine Waters. The obstruction of justice in the Mueller report, where he had about 10 documented obstruction of justices, that was even supported by her deputy, the number two person, Steny Hoyer from Maryland. So she overruled them all. And as a result, I don't think she's protecting those 10 or 12 new members of Congress from Trump. He's going after them already, and he's crowing. He's taunting her. He's saying Nancy Pelosi has the majority in the House, and she didn't go forward with all these charges. And don't you know why? Because they're all lies. They're all fake. That's why. I've done nothing wrong. So he's taunting her, and he will do it before hundreds of thousands of people in his rallies in the coming months. A huge lost opportunity.
That was Ralph Nader speaking on Democracy Now! About the impeachment hearings. This was a little bit over a week ago that this was on. And I played it for you this morning because he does go over many of the other ways that Trump could be charged. And I think that's one of the things that's most frustrating for people like myself, is that there were clearly other charges that could be brought, and it brings into suspicion whether the leading Democrats, in particular Pelosi, but not by herself, really want all of the evidence to come out. I think if all the evidence comes out, it comes out that high-level people throughout the White House were involved in this call. And I don't think that they want that picture of America's high leaders to be out there. They don't mind it being out there on Trump, but maybe not let it out that that's more widespread. This is Linda Olson Osterlin talking to you. We are on Thursday morning talk radio at KBOO 90.7 on the dial, KBOO.FM if you're listening on the computer or your smartphone. I'm inviting you to call in and become part of this conversation. I have no guests but you today, and I'll be bringing you Ralph Nader's voice perhaps again to talk about, where is the impeachment at now? Is it stalled? Is it going to go forward? Can you even bear spending a minute more thinking about it? And if you can't, what are we going to do about that? Like many people there are out there, many radicals don't believe that the impeachment process will remove Trump, and don't believe that the Democratic Party will succeed in wresting power from Trump in the next election if they continue with the modest way they are going about attacking him, and if they're trying to put up old dinosaurs like Biden. So call in and let's talk about this. Let's talk about the impeachment trial, and let's talk about how it relates to the coming election, and what you think needs to be done about it. One thing, so that's phone number. Let me give you that phone number, 503-231-8187. That's the way to get into the air room and get on air here at KBOO. Once again, it's 503-231-8187. I'm very much looking forward to hearing from you. I personally like to hear from the voices of our very learned and thoughtful audience, and you know, from various directions and political outlooks. I'd like to hear from all of them from you, so please do give us a call. I wanted to bring up, I found an article that said, hashtag we want witnesses trends as protesters demand a fair trial and an end to the GOP cover-up. That's one way people are making it clear that they want what they want. And I think many coming close to a true majority, or half of Americans, want him to be not just impeached but removed. Something up to 70%, I believe, say that they want him impeached, and so, which he is, and convicted of the impeachment. I certainly want him out of office. I think we need to talk about what would that mean with a Vice President Pence in power. He's pretty creepy in his own right, and also was involved in the Ukraine. Could we get him thrown out along with the president? Have to probably be a separate impeachment policy and process, and I don't know if they're willing to go with it. But I believe that he's been involved in some of the crimes of cover-up around it, and the process going on. So that would be one way to look at what could happen with Pence. And so trending hashtag we want witnesses is trending. And if you're a person who uses Twitter, you certainly have the ability to find that hashtag and other hashtags that relate to getting Trump out. I want to talk a little bit also and bring in another organization that's been fighting hard to get to get Trump out, and that's the Refuse Fascism organization. And it has been staging demonstrations almost daily throughout the weeks, throughout different cities. And just one second, I'll get my paperwork out here and be able to tell you a little bit more about that. Well, my paperwork is being hidden to me because of my own clumsiness. Yeah, it's hashtag out now is also trending. And I know the people who are with Refuse Fascism are up in Seattle, and my sister tends to go out with them. And she had these out now stickers, and she said they could not keep them in their hands. People wanted them so much. This was at the Women's March, not this last weekend, but the one before. And they were going out with the out now signs and the Trump signs, and they just got a huge crowd really wanting to agree with them that it's time to stop this. It's time to not wait for the government to do something, but for people to get out in the streets enough to let them know that they really need to consider removing him, that they really need to remove him. I think that's another organization, and they're talking about, I can read you a little bit of what they have to say about why they think this is so important. They suggest that unless the people act now, flooding the streets of D.C. and cities and towns across the country in sustained nonviolent protest demanding removal, we won't get removal. They say, meanwhile, a fascist movement is advancing 2,200 heavily armed people to Richmond, Virginia. This was written before last weekend when that Richmond, Virginia thing went much quieter and more peaceful than expected. But the Refuse Fascism statement continues. Fascism has been unfolding. Concentration camps on the border, environmental devastation accelerated, war, even nuclear war threatened, white supremacist rule, fascist mobs attacked individuals in different cities. Truth and silence is being erased. The right to abortion is near gone, and the rule of law and democratic and civil rights are being stripped away. All this and more will be accelerated and locked in if Trump is allowed to remain in power. Imagine the vengeance and entitlement to go forward with a program that puts the entire planet and all of humanity in its crosshairs. And then it has a call, stop being a spectator, show up now and when it counts. And that statement says that people can change this dynamic if they stop sitting passively back, if masses of people converge on D.C. I think masses of people did converge on D.C. yesterday. I'm not sure how many. I tried to look it up on the news, and it's definitely mentioned. I saw pictures, but I didn't see any announcement about how many people showed up to let the White House know that they want the whole thing over. They want him out. They want Trump and Pence out now, and they want to push for the impeachment to resolve with impeaching President Trump. What do you think about that? What do you want about that? Do you care at all about this right now? Has it driven you nuts so that you think it's irrelevant? I fear that it's not irrelevant. I fear that it makes a big difference whether or not we can get Trump out of office. I do think, depending on how many people are paying attention, that the facts of his corruption and the facts that he is a crook are really hard to deny. His phone calls and the revelations about those and what he was asking for, his demanding basically a shakedown of the Ukraine president to look into Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's involvement with a particular corrupt corporation there, and that he was doing it like a shakedown, and it was for personal interest. And I think they've made that very, very clear repeatedly. It's interesting how people like Parnas are making a big splash because he worked directly with Giuliani and he had a lot of information, but mainstream media has been saying that information didn't come out before the congressional representatives had filed their articles, but that's not true. It came out 2 days before the articles were ended, before the hearings were ended, because I heard it on TV. Yeah, they reported it on TV at that time. So apparently they wanted to hold back the information about Parnas and that he's got texts and emails and recordings that would fully incriminate the president as doing a quid pro quo. And he's very clear about that. And yes, he is up on criminal charges, but the criminal charges are related to what he was doing with and for Donald Trump. So him coming forward this week, and then we've got Pompeo still denying everything, and we've got Bolton with a book. They're nothing if not for profit, you know? They're nothing if not for profit. They want those weapons going, and a lot of our military leaders that we ask their opinions of, they very much have money stock in those exact kinds of armaments that we're sending around the world and that we're making millions of dollars off of. So I think it's pretty important that we look at all of these aspects when we look at where should the impeachment go. We do have someone on the line. It's Phil. Good morning, Phil.
Hello. I have not participated in visible protest against Trump to the level of satisfaction that I want, and it's not my fault. I participated in the Women's March, and there are so many of us throughout the world who had euphoria after that event, and then it fell flat. We have not had a similar event since. And I think it's not too late. Tomorrow night may be the last chance if the Senate hasn't already voted by then. I don't think we need to gather downtown. We need to gather anywhere. So why don't we gather at every major bus stop? For example, I live in Lake Oswego, and the Fridays for the Future call us to be out. So why don't I go to the Lake Oswego Transit Center Safeway, and why don't we fill that lot and do that with every important bus stop or park in the city or the country? And maybe Congress, wanting our backing, could finally act.
Yes. And Phil, why do you want to do it that way, the anywhere people are? Because it allows people to do it right where they are?
Well, last night I was downtown at the fountain on the riverfront, and there were probably 100 of us with good signs.
Yeah.
And so the big problem with this coming off tomorrow night is that we're not prepared with signs. We weren't well enough prepared at the Women's March. And at subsequent events, we have still not come together in learning how to show our displeasure peacefully.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you a clue my sister gave me way back when the WTO was happening in Seattle, and I wanted to go up to be in it, and my sister lives up there. And so I was talking with her about it, and I said, geez, I didn't bring any signs, and I really wanted to, you know, say, at that time, Clinton was bombing over Iraq every single day. You could read it in the newspaper in these little tiny articles that said briefly, and it was driving me crazy because everyone was pretending there was no war going on, and yet there he was bombing every day, keeping the over Iraq. And so, and I even had a nephew who had been sent to bomb over Iraq, so I wanted something like that. My sister said, well, look, here, I've got this yellow piece of cloth, let's write it with a black marker on this, and then I'll pin it to your coat. And so that's what I did. I had my signs pinned to my coat. They were just written on paper we could grab, not paper we could grab. In this case, it was cloth we could grab, and just put it on me. But I think any of us can do that. We can pin a sign right to our shirt and have our hands free and be letting people know what we believe. So I encourage you to just grab any method you can when you want to make sure you're seen and be seen. And if you're someone at home with children, you might have colored paper or poster board around, and use that. Just cut it up, hold it with your hands if you don't have a stick to hold it up. I love great creative signs, and I love great creative chants. So, you know, you can always try to, if you have any talent that way, Phil, you can try to think of some good chants to lead.
Yeah. So if tomorrow is our last gasp, we don't have to have signs. We just need to be out.
Yeah. And then you're thinking tomorrow's our last gasp because you think they're going to be closing it down and saying, taking the vote.
Well, they may have already acquitted by tomorrow. Or I don't know when, maybe Saturday.
Well, there still is this issue of Bolton and his book and what he says, and whether or not they're going to let him be a witness or not. And of course, that does require that some Republicans step across the line. But It seems like most of the media wants to say there's no way it's going to happen, but then there's other media that say no, they're feeling the pressure. They are feeling the pressure to at least say they heard the evidence if it's there and available, that they're having trouble going home saying, I refuse to allow those people who were on the line with Trump to speak. So I'm not sure it's going to be all over tomorrow. And if you haven't done anything, I encourage you to call your own senators. Yes, of course, they know we're behind them, but they really do take the numbers of calls they're getting about different things, and they see them as trending. If you're a Twitterer, trend, you know, hashtag out now, or Trey, you know, do your own no impeachment without removal. You know, I think that there's many ways that we can make our voices heard, and I do think that they're conscious of it now. I don't think that that means that they always will respond how the public at large wants, but I think they're sensitive in particular because of the elections coming up, and they don't want to lose.
Well, we should be out tonight, too. Anything we can do?
Now, there's a general call to go out tonight. Do you know if there's one big one downtown, or...
Is there?
I don't know. I wasn't able to look. We'll look that up and find out. But yes, you're encouraging everybody to get out tonight with whatever signs you can make and talk to the people.
Yeah, anywhere you can get. And people should be somehow collecting pictures of this. And I really believe that if we had had monthly sequels to the Women's March, we'd be in a much different place right now. What happened that we didn't do that? Were people scared and somehow stopped us?
I think we just, you know, I think there's a tendency to do a great big event like that and then think somehow we'll carry it forward in other ways. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure there are some people who have carried it forward in other ways, but...
But that Women's March was just so fantastic. And I think
whenever we're together in large numbers with our fellow man expressing ourselves on something important, it's always a really valuable experience for the individual. I think the danger is when we don't get the result we want, we feel like, oh, it doesn't work to be out in the streets. But I think being out in the streets is not a once-a-time thing. You know, we hope we'll have one big demonstration and it'll make the difference, but that won't. It takes sustained response. I know during the Vietnam War, I was a protester during that war, and I know that it took years of accelerating protests. All over the nation.
Let's be safe at bus stops.
yeah. Let's be safe on our bus stops and put up your signs. Well, thank you very much, Phil. I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
And do we have any other callers on the line? Right. Okay, well, someone named Kathy called in. She didn't want to get on the air, and she wanted me to say something about immigration and children being locked up. And I do think that that is a, you know, I do think that that quite clearly points to fascism. We really have concentration camps on our border where people are locked up and treated extremely badly, where children are separated, yes, still today, from their parents, and where there's no real legal due process for the people being held there. And these are profit-making outfits that are holding people and housing people and making money. You can't get closer to the definition of profit, of fascism, than the state making, you know, the state setting up profit for private industry and using its powers in the interests of private industry. And that's what's happening down there. And it's torturing and tormenting people. And I have only heard of the candidates who are now, you know, in the front running. I've only heard of Bernie Sanders really addressing this in any kind of way. And I've been very disappointed to hear not very many of them do it at all. I want to know, frankly, what the president's going to do day one. The next president, not Trump, what's he going to do day one about those camps? Because we could take some darn immediate action. I mean, put out a public call for social workers to take some time off from work or where they're doing their work and head down there. We know how to work with people to find them resources. We could be trained by the people in the area. There are people who are trained already in finding housing and situations for the people who are coming, and allow the asylum seekers to seek their asylum, facilitate their their application so it can be honestly viewed according to international law, not according to something else funny. And this means we have to go far back in policy beyond Obama. Obama started and was for this. Child separation happened under him. He was coldly dismissive of the families and the children coming up on the border at the same time as his wife was holding up signs in Washington, D.C. to say, return our girls, some young women who had been kidnapped in Africa by a terrorist group, and I completely support having them returned. But at the same time, that very same day, Obama was down on the border chastising the people who dared to try to come here. And no words of compassion for the children and the women fleeing murder and harm. So I hope that answers your question, Kathy. I don't know what else you'd want me to say about it. I'm sure that there is some way in which all of the ways that have been happening there are violations of international law and could be considered impeachable articles as well. Nobody has drawn up any of those, and maybe that would be something interesting to have someone do as an exercise and get it out there on the web. Make it, you know, throw it out on a hashtag with Twitter and see what people have to say. So thanks for very much for calling in, Kathy. I want to give that phone number again. It's 503-231-8187. We really very much want to hear from you. You're more important than my voice. I have some facts here I can read for you, but I prefer to hear from you. If you want to know what the 13 articles of impeachment are that Ralph Nader drew up, and they are on today's schedule on the homepage of the webpage. And so you can read them there if you go to today's episode, and it talks about this show. It does have the 13 articles there, and it actually, I think, has a link to the audio. They were talked about on his radio, so that's the way you find them. I do believe that we have somebody on the line, and I am Claudia. Good morning, Claudia. You're on.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I agree with you completely about the disaster at the southern border and the need for housing, basic human sustenance, and so forth. But what are we going to do about people in Portland and Seattle and San Francisco? They need housing too.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Talking about one without the other is America is not the land of opportunity that it once was.
No. And they're, you know, and they're different questions, and I'm sure that people who are on the streets, some of them say, well, why bring any more people here? Why allow them here? And one, it's because it's the law. The law of the international law is that when people are fleeing harm, we have a responsibility to allow
what
them
so?
To seek asylum.
What so?
Yeah, I know you know that. And then the second, and the, I think the second thing is that we really do have to deal with houseless. And I'll just throw it out really quick for me. As far as I'm concerned, we all ought to be out in the streets right now demanding a wage starting at $18 an hour. None of this $15 an hour, and we're just moved up to $13 an hour. We all know, all of the statistics show that you cannot live on it. So if you get a raise, if you get a wage of 18 as the base, and then you put a fee on every empty apartment, a monthly fee on every empty apartment until they get filled, because they've built over 18,000 apartments that are sitting empty in Portland, and this phenomenon is happening around the world where they make their money off of them by speculating and trading securities. So trading, like dividing up the apartments into tiny little securities and then trading them. And so they don't need to make money off of people filling those apartments. And those apartments are sitting empty using our housing space. We should find them. They should have to pay a fee to the city of Portland for every month those apartments are empty. If we did those two things, we would have people being able to stay in a home or find a home and being able to earn a wage that allows them to continue to do that. Those are the two components we need, and we just avoid mandating them.
I'd say we need a third one, too, and that's massive redistribution of the wealth.
As a whole,
sounds like Michael Bloomberg is going to do a little bit along those lines on his own.
Oh, I'm sorry about that getting in your way there. We're hearing a little beep every once in a while.
It's an iPhone. What can I say?
I don't know. Yeah, so I agree with you about that, the redistribution of wealth. And I think that, you know, the Poor People's March going around the nation is trying to point out that 43% of us in this, quote, good economy live in poverty. Those two things don't match, but every night on the news, you'll hear them say the economy's good.
I know.
Kind of drives you crazy, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And thank you for taking my call.
And have you, I just want to ask you about impeachment. Have you by any chance contacted your senators?
Oh, yeah. For all the good it does.
I know. I feel the same, but I do it anyway because I do know they do count them up. They use them in situations like this as how much support do I have.
Contact the senators who aren't my senators. For instance, I was in Alaska when Frank Murkowski resigned his Senate seat and gave it to his daughter, Lisa Murkowski, who is now sitting.
She's one of the four wobblers.
I'm sure she'd just do well talking about nepotism and Hunter Biden.
I tried to get through to McConnell's office. You couldn't get through. I couldn't get through at all. Just kept being blocked and knocked off. So he doesn't have to hear how many people are upset with him.
I'm sure.
So, well, thank you very much, Claudia. Thanks for calling in. I think we have another call on the line. Arthur, good morning.
Good morning. I'll just make a couple of comments. First of all, I like your discussion today. You made some nice, you had some good solutions for the housing situation. So having lived in a tent formerly, I appreciate your comments. Let me make a suggestion something that can be done quickly to get people not swept off the streets is the Oregon Department of Transportation owns property on the side of highways all over the city. And a lot of people want to camp there and they get swept by ODOT.
Yep.
I think ODOT, and if it's truly an emergency, ODOT should be forced by the governor to allow camping on ODOT property. Let me make one more comment.
Okay.
The Women's March and the children in the cages, which is jail is a cage.
Yeah.
The Women's March should just go right to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, 20,000 strong, and try to get those kids out. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Well, Arthur, I really like that idea. I do think, you know, women, whether we still want it to be this way or not, do feel closer to children. They feel it a little bit more viscerally, especially if they've had their own children. And it would be a very powerful sign to have thousands of women from around the country get down to El Paso or one of the other sites and support the women there. I think we need to take actions like that. We also have people locked up here and can take action around that. I know that there are some good organizations in Portland that you can look up on Facebook about that. I do believe we have another caller.
This is John.
John, good morning.
Hi. I do think we need massive amounts of people in the streets. But here's a suggestion I just came up with. Two people could do this. One person could photograph it, somebody hanging a sheet or a well-made banner off of overpass, and the slogan I came up with is, honk if you're down for removing this clown. A simple chant that would be easy to paint on a sheet or make a fancy banner. And then put it on social media and get people all over the country to copy that.
I like that. See, I'm a horrible chanter. I mean, I'm a great chanter. Give me a chant. I can chant forever. I went to enough protests when I was young that I learned to use a lower part of my voice and I don't lose my voice, but I'm loud. So, you know, I like to chant. But I love that. So it's honk if you're down for removing this clown. I like that. Very good.
We need to do it right away and get it all over the country.
Right. And I do think there's also the hashtag out now. Just that symbol is now showing up in a lot of the demonstrations you see around the country. And I think that, you know, it just says a lot. And I was surprised. My daughter said, I mean, my sister said they had literally hundreds of them, and people were just taking them and giving donations left and right. I'll see if I can't get some of the out now stickers down here and put them out in front and KBOO, and people can come by and pick them up.
Okay, well, let's all do whatever we can think of and get on it immediately.
And where we can come together with others, we do make a big difference in big numbers as well.
Well, thank you for what you're doing.
Well, and thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You Bye-bye. Too. I believe we have another caller on the line. Brian, good morning.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was calling in. A couple of things. You were just talking about support for impeachment. I was went to a rally, a month or more back, and my time didn't allow me to get all the way downtown in Portland to be part of.
We dropped you somehow. Are you there? Engineer, do we know what happened? Okay, I think that was John, right? I'm sorry, Brian. I apologize, Brian. We lost you somehow. You just went beep and we're gone. We're going to go ahead to Trudy, but do call back and we'll get you back on the line. Good morning, Trudy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to try to answer what I remember to be your questions in the beginning. Is it important to impeach Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Will it matter? What does this moment mean? And I think in the short term, as others were saying, it's important to demand witnesses since 75% of the public, according to polls, is saying that they want witnesses, and somehow the poll numbers are not getting through to the Republican senators. Who knows if protests will? But so that's, you know, the short term, sort of the tactical part. But I'd like to consider whether we can also talk about the longer term, since what we're up against in this country and globally are developments that are so frightening that removing Trump, even if it happens in the best case, won't do it. And
no, we're still at the beginning of, and it feels like in a way we're at the beginning of a really, really very difficult time. The right is rising in countries all around the world. And they're acting out in violent ways, small groups, small individuals, but also big groups. You know, they're showing their power and attempting to scare people and doing that. And I think that, the belief in, I think the senators are basically asking for a king. Why don't they just crown him? Because they really say anything he can, when you break down what they're saying and you listen to him, that anything he does is legitimate because he's the president. Well, that's a king. That's
right,
not a president.
Right. And in fact, that's why some people are saying that impeachment could make this, that the process itself is in a way making it worse, because potentially when he's not indicted, when he's not convicted.
Removed, yeah.
Removed, that it emboldens him. And, you know, given that we are, I was just hearing this, seconds away from midnight on the nuclear, what's it called, doomsday
right.
clock, you know, given that we're mere decades away potentially from extinction and years away from runaway global warming, it's massive systemic change that needs to happen. And so when I look at, you know, as eloquent as Schiff has been, as wonderful as Jeffries has been, and the other managers, I think they're doing a great job. I've been watching nearly all of it. One of these fanatics. And, you know, but how do we get, so as wonderful as they are, we have a two-party system that is locked into being corporatists and warmongers. There are potentially as many warmongers in the Democratic Party, funded by Raytheon and others that profit directly, you know, from extracting the remaining resources. But we don't address the challenges with this system. So, you know, what I would love, it feels desperate to me, so, you know, it feels like, what I would love to have seen Bernie do after 2016 was to start building a third party.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have seen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar be part of that third party, because it seems the only way a third party is powerful is if it has those big names in it where,
yeah,
you know, people are just heading out, you know, and recruiting other big names to it, doing something in a bold and coordinated way that, you know, that can't help but get.
Well, and I think people, you know, with regard to this, I think people need to be willing to tell Pelosi and the DNC, we will not vote for who you put up if it's not who we want. I mean, we mm-hmm. need to be willing. They're counting on that we're so scared of Trump that they can put in a Biden who will carry yeah. out warmongering policies. And I mean, yeah. We got here on the backs of the Democratic Party. I don't want any more of those old fossils. They need to step aside with that kind of talk. And if they give us Biden, I'm certain that we're going to lose.
Right.
Because young people aren't going to be, I mean, it's very hard to get inspired to vote for Biden, especially when yeah. you think he probably is crooked.
Yeah, I don't think that probably, I don't know how we define crooked, but that the system, foreign policy, is it going to change under a liberal? You know, I mean,
I think Bernie would do it very differently. I really do.
I think Bernie would too. I don't consider him a liberal.
No.
I consider him a progressive.
Yeah, I think Bernie would, and I think the public is more and more, the trend is for him. We've just got to let them not say, well, you can't have him because he's not really a Democrat.
And not only that, I mean, just reading recently, it's just chilling to read that Hillary Clinton and, I understand, Barack Obama and others, plus the stacked appointments of corporatists on the DNC now, that it's a concerted effort to bring down Bernie.
Yeah.
Stop Bernie is the phrase.
And
trying to raise money for it. They're slightly worried that it could backfire on them. Let's hope, you know.
Yeah.
But
we're really in this tight space, and we really need to, and our action is needed in so many directions. It's very hard to decide what to push, you know, where to and I don't know how to let the DNC know that we're not going to go for their, you know, that Hillary said she would maybe not back Bernie if he won the nomination.
Yeah.
She had to backtrack that. Excuse my cough. She had to backtrack that within the same day, within hours, I believe, because people were going, wait, Bernie, who you're chastising, is playing it fair and going to do it the right way, and you're going to do exactly the opposite? Please.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, you know, like Noam Chomsky says, it's the biggest election interferer is concentrated capital. You know, and that is what you see in the DNC. That's what you see in the RNC. If you look at that list, Kevin Gostula, I don't know how to pronounce his name, he did a whole rundown on Twitter of who are all these appointees. And they are 100%, I believe, corporatists. I mean, it is just, it's that. So how are we going to see Bernie get any of the fairness that he didn't get? How are we going to see that change from what it was in 2016? I think it's a concerted strategy to stop Bernie.
Yes, and I think unfortunately that's because they don't really want the wave of change that he represents, you know.
That's
and
right.
If he comes in because the people really want it, that wave of change is likely to be pushed forward. I don't think they want free colleges. I don't think they want to get rid of drug companies still being able to raise the cost of drugs and make our health system work for everyone. Any of those things that cost too much for the wealthy, they don't really want. And so they give us, you know, half measures and partial measures, you know, and like, yeah, affordable, you know, the Affordable Care Act is better than we had before, and it does do a lot of things, but it's not all of what people want. So I think we're going to have to push in all directions, I guess, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Trudy. We do have two more callers, so I'm going to let you go and let them get on.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It was fun. Bye-bye.
And our next is our next caller is who? Okay, Natano. Good morning.
Good morning. We need to grab him by the subpoenas and put him in an orange suit.
I think I wouldn't. Excuse my coughing. I'm trying to get a hold of it with a cough, a sore throat thing here. But I'd like to see him in an orange suit. I admit that. That would be fun.
Yeah. No, it's these guys are radical Puritans. There's nothing conservative about them. They're just pure radical Puritans that want to make sure that Roe v. Wade is overturned and that they can staff the courts with these radical Puritan weirdos. I mean, these guys are just, they're not, you know, they're a different breed of power-hungry corporatists, and they
they're clearly willing to drop their morals when it comes to Trump. You know,
well, yeah, I mean,
they're willing to go for anything. You know, he can even put his hands on women and brag about it, and that isn't a problem for them. Yeah, I think.
Well, that's the problem. Where is the threshold? I think the threshold is if he gets caught in a, you know, videotape having sex with your daughter.
No, raping a boy would do it. As a social worker, I found that there were certain churches, they wouldn't mind if the dad was doing it to the little girl, they'd mind if he was doing it to the boy.
Yeah, no, that's the problem, is this threshold flexibility is just so bizarre, and this gas lamp and that Dershowitz and these guys are doing, I mean,
Well, Dershowitz, I think, pretty much said that anything he wants to do, he's protected in doing.
Right. Yeah, and Dershowitz didn't take his underwear off when he got a massage at Epstein's sex island. I mean, it's just ridiculous. These guys are out of control, and people need to call their congressman and also vote for Mark Haas, because he's in favor of ranked choice voting.
Mark Haas? Now, where is he running at?
Secretary of State.
For Portland, for Oregon,
Oregon.
Okay.
Oregon, yeah. So he's all in favor of ranked choice voting. And if we can get ranked choice voting, then we don't run into these problems where, you know, two progressives will split the ticket and allow some superstitious spending freak in there.
Right.
Because we need to get fiscal conservatives like progressives and we have to stop, you know, blaming people that voted for Nader and stuff like that because
that didn't do it anyway. Didn't the Supreme Court intervene on that election?
They did.
Yeah, that was the real violation, not Ralph Nader. We should have all been up in the air about, hey, this is not within the Supreme Court's jurisdiction at all in any way.
Well, part of that lingering problem is Republicans own the vote counting machines. They control the software. They won't allow any audits. Mm-hmm. And they say it's too complicated to give a paper receipt, even though Diebold makes ATM machines and you can get a receipt and a, you know,
I'm hoping to have Greg Palast on sometime in the next month and have him really give us a rundown. I'm going to be on the 13th of February. I'm going to try to get Greg Palast on and give us a good rundown of the different ways they're stealing the votes right now. I know that he's concerned and working hard in California, that there's a whole lot of California votes that are vulnerable to theft. And so I think we'll get him on and talk about that, because that is the other thing that, you know, if this guy gets through, we want to make sure the election gets done so that he does not win again. But we want to get someone good and smart in there and not just leave these bad changes, or people like, you know, Feinstein, when little kids say we want to stop using fossil fuels in 10 years, she just turns to him and says it won't happen.
Right. Yeah. No. And if Biden were worth voting for, he would step down right now to just eliminate this whole thing about him being corrupt and him being the challenger. I mean, I don't know
if he's corrupt or not, but it is a little strange that his son would have a position in a country like that his father's having power over.
It's just a fraction of what Trump is doing with his kids, but it is nepotism, and it is you know, it's very unethical, but, you know, these guys get into office with $100,000 worth of assets and they get out with $3.6 million.
Yeah, I mean, actually, they really do, don't they? Them. Well, I'm going to let you go. We have one more caller on the line. Brian, yay, we got you back. I'm glad we have.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know how far I got before, but I was just talking about being out in Sandy and expecting a lot of negativity for impeachment, and it wasn't. So that was really
good.
And then I was just going to, my view of the impeachment trials, I've been really following, I'm able to right now do my work and follow the impeachment trials, and I don't think of myself as, I think of myself as being average intelligence, but it's difficult to, you know, because it's constantly going back and forth, and I'm trying to keep an open mind, and I hear, like, Dershowitz, and I go, well, doggone, he sure has a point there, and then maybe I'll stay on and hear the people comment after the hearings are over, and they bring up things that history or viewpoints that I didn't realize before, and I go, oh yeah, maybe he doesn't have a point. You know, I'm feeling myself being pulled back and forth. At one point, after Dershowitz did his first stint, I remember thinking, you know what, maybe we just need to be done with this and get on with it and to just put everything into defeating this cretin next time. But then, of course, I hear arguments after the fact, and I listen to Democracy Now, and people come on, and I go, oh, you know. So I know what it's like. I'm going back and forth, but of course I want him out of power, but I'm also one of the people that's afraid of Pence. I really...
Yeah, I wondered when someone was going to bring that up. What's it going to be if we get Pence? I think he's pretty creepy.
You know,
scientific talk there. Pretty creepy.
Yeah, I've been listening to some of the talk about Pence and some of those ultra-right-wing Christians and some of their beliefs about end of days, which my father was a pastor, and so I heard that kind of stuff when I was growing up. But this is a reminder that he's right in there with them, and it's really, really weird. And having him, he's not a firebrand like Trump. He's not a crazy person in that way, but I think he's very
well, if we got to do the impeachment, though, he would only have 10 months or 8 months.
The damage that he could do, especially combined with the hatred and vitriol that would be coming after, if we got rid of Trump, I can't imagine what kind of vengeance would be brewing. So I don't know. Without getting rid of him, though,
they're going to be there. And if they win the next election, it's, you know, they're going to consolidate all of these horrible changes they've made to our environment. Roe v.
Like
Wade, et cetera.
And I had one last thing I wanted to say, just going back to the discussion you had with somebody about minimum wage. And I would just put out there that I would like to hear a show on KABU about the minimum wage and a little bit of talk about the standpoint. I'm a small farmer, and all the years farming, it's very difficult to make money. And so, you know, getting minimum wage, if I were to calculate things out as the owner of the farm, I barely ever make minimum wage, and how it works for people that have businesses like this that are trying to do good work but don't make a lot of money. How do we deal with like $18 an
hour?
Yeah,
I hear you, and I think that would be an important part of a show on minimum wage. You know, farm labor has always been able to pay lower, or at least historically has been able to pay lower, but we know that creates this so two-tier society with people making significantly lower, doing some of the very hardest work in the world. I was a horrible strawberry and bean picker. I just want to let you know you should never hire me for that kind of job because I did it so bad they laughed at me. But
it's very difficult to find. And so if people, even if they're talented and can do the work, if they know that they can get a lot more working at Starbucks or whatever, then it's, you know, then it's a lost cause.
Or moving quickly into construction. If you're a guest worker coming into this country and looking for work that you know how to do, construction is another way where people come in. So good suggestion for a show.
Yeah, thank you.
And we will try to take that up. I'd like to take up my two ideas and just have people tell me why they think that couldn't work and why we shouldn't be bold. I don't see we have anything to lose about being full out bold.
Yeah. I know. They're bold.
Yep. Well, I'm going to let you go. We're at the end of the show. I want to thank you very much. Arthur, it was, right? Or
no,
is this Brian again? I got my Brian back. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I want to thank all of the callers. I want to thank Asia. Our engineer has been doing a great job for us today. And I want to thank you, our listeners, always. You're why we are on radio. You are our compadres. If we're accused of preaching to the choir, it's because we, the choir, need to hear from each other. It makes a difference. It raises our spirits. It lets us stay in the fight when everything can look so dire and dark. And I thank you for being out there and being part of the solution just by caring about it. So once again, thank you for being members and listeners to KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Time is now 9 a.m. Up next, Press Watch.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th, from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library Branch at the Multnomah County Library in Portland. Classical Music Confidential will be hosted by Bruce Charles and will take a look at Portland's secret classical music past of the 1940s. Again, that's Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th, from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library Branch of the Multnomah County Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society's concert series, featuring Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, an ensemble from the worlds of jazz and folk music. The show is Friday, February 21st, 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Sam Ryder has been a U.S. State Department musical ambassador, taking his accordion to at least six nations. For 6 years, Ryder has been band leader for Jazz at the Lincoln Center's youth program. The Human Hands feature the violin stylings of Oregonian Alex Hargraves. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ha ha.